opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
As long as we are focusing and thinking we are in a democracy, then we keep scratching our heads and saying, well, why is this happening? Why is this happening? Why is this happening? If we were focusing on, we understand we are in a system of racism, white supremacy. The system of racism is most fundamentally about is white genetic survival and preventing white genetic annihilation. Because of this, there has to be a continuous attack on black male persons by any and all means necessary, inclusive of killing black males at will. See, if we were focused in that way and we articulated that, instead of, you know, you have a large number of black people who do not want to focus on racism. And this is why the Attorney General Eric Holder said, are we a nation of cowards being unable to focus on and talk about racism? See, if we were talking about racism in a comprehensive way, and if we were saying that we understand, see, it's like the white people go on and on and on talking negatively about black people in general, black men in particular, and we don't have a checkmating response overall. I mean, people like yourself, of course you do, because you are one of the courageous few that has a program where racism, white supremacy is being talked about. But on the whole, most black people are not talking about racism and are fearful of talking about racism because of fear of white retaliation. And this is what I feel that it's the most important thing that we need to have a breakthrough. And this is a golden opportunity at this particular point in time when all of these things are happening. Had you heard that there was a 12-year-old black male child that was shot and killed by police officers yesterday?
In Cleveland, I think his name is Tamir Rice. Yes, ma'am.
You see, they said he had a toy gun.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what people ought to be looking at is, there are almost no white people that have just been shot and killed by black police officers. None. So this ought to say to us, wait a minute, we need to be saying, why is this happening? And I would say beyond police officers need training. They have training. They don't shoot white people, but they are shooting black people. And shooting black men, black children. So I say the reason is because when the white collective looks at black men, they see enemy of the state, enemy of the state of racism, white supremacy, enemy of the state for white genetic survival. And so this, the problem needs to be elevated to that level of discussion. And see, that, I believe, that begins to put a brake on the behavior of white people. As long as we don't let the mirror reflect back, we understand exactly why you have to engage in this behavior. It's not a mystery. Do you see? You can go to the discussion of Norm Stamper if you have to get a white source, who, in his book Breaking Rank, talked about how white police officers are trained to think about black men. So if we could elevate our discussion from the black side of the chessboard, we will be making increments, in my view, we will be making increments of progress. But as long as we don't want to call racism, white supremacy for what it is, and indicate that we understand in depth what this system is really all about and its absolute necessity to kill black men. See, that's like somebody going to the psychiatrist and having the psychiatrist explain to the person who's engaging in mass murder, these are the subconscious and conscious dynamics that are going on with you that are causing this kind of behavior. And this is, to me, that would be a PowerPoint for black people if we were to begin doing that, as opposed to why is it happening and just thinking that, oh, the police officers need more training. They have enough training so that they don't go around shooting white men. And they don't go around shooting white children. So they have training. It's what is the underlying thought in the total system of racism, white supremacy, local, national, global. So that's where I would like to see our discussion go.
Absolutely. And the 12-year-old that Dr. Welsing just mentioned again, they released his name today, Tamir Rice. And this happened in Cleveland, Ohio, just a few miles down the road from John Crawford, who was shot earlier this year in August, just a few days before Michael Brown, shot in Walmart holding an air rifle, a BB gun, not, you know, any type of military weapon, just a BB gun. And they gunned him down, killed him on camera in Walmart. No one indicted, no one going to trial. Just, whoops, our bad, another dead black male. I did want to get in because I know M1, he's brought this case up regularly. Just further emphasize your point. Detective Joseph Walker, he is a black was a black enforcement official. He shot and killed a white male who was some sort of road rage incident where they called him a nigger and all this other stuff and threatened his family, and he ended up shooting and killing him. They removed him from duty, and he still hasn't got his job back. His case went to trial. He was acquitted. It was found that this was a justified shooting, and he still has not got his job back, just to kind of further solidify the point that you're making about you just don't see these type of rash of shootings of white people. There was also a shooting on Thursday of this week in New York where an unarmed black male was shot and killed in a dimly lit stairwell. And
in the stairwell.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
And I wanted to get your response to this comment. This was from the mayor of New York, Bill de Blasio, who is married to a black female. He was commenting, the victim in this case, Akai Gurley, I hope I'm saying his name correctly. He was unarmed, shot and killed. But the mayor said, and this is in quotes, this was in the New York Times, I think when people see a tragedy, of course it pains them and it reminds us that we have a lot of work to do, Mr. de Blasio said. Still, he said each of the recent deaths involving the police from Staten Island, Eric Garner, to Ferguson, Michael Brown, has its own dynamics, and he warned against linking them all together. What are your thoughts on that statement from Mayor de Blasio?
I would say that that's a tragic mistake in that, well, let me just leave it at that. I think that that's a tragic error. Now, here's a white male who's married to a black woman who has a black son. And if he doesn't have any more insight than that, time after time after time after time, if you see white police officers shooting and killing black males, and then you say, don't link them all together. This is not a form of correct thinking. I mean, that's the one thing that all of these cases have in common. That's how you begin to understand things, when you see the same thing happening over and over and over again. I wouldn't be surprised if, as we are speaking, it's happening someplace. And for sure, it is going to happen again and again until the problem is specifically addressed. See, that's like the problem of diabetes. It's going to go on and on and on and on until people begin to understand, well, what is causing this epidemic of diabetes? See, you don't see case after case after case of diabetes and say, well, there's no connection. You see, but we have to, as black people, we have to find the courage to speak up and say, this is racism, white supremacy. We have all too many black people. Oh, no, I don't think that we should be talking about racism and playing the race card. Our 500-year history in this part of the world has been based on race. Everything that happens to us is based on race. Black people are not living the lives of white people. I don't care how much money they have.
Absolutely.
And just like President Obama said, if he had a son, it could have been Trayvon Martin. And Mr. de Blasio, shame on him. And shame on the black mother if she lets Mr. de Blasio get away with it. White males are not being shot and killed in New York. It's black males, black people of color. And black people are the target because we have the greatest level genetic potential to cause white genetic annihilation, which is why Norm Stamper can say the police officers, the white police officers, are motivated to harm the darker the black man. So, again, our self-respect, you know, I do a lot of talking about the importance of self-respect. And our self-respect should motivate us to insist that we get to the bottom of, get an understanding in depth about why we are seeing what we are seeing. See, even the immigration issue is related to racism. The system of racism, white supremacy, and this is not against the Hispanic people as such. The Hispanic people are being brought in as black people are being pushed out of the urban centers. Everything is related to race. And this is why all people of color learn, if you're black, get back, brown, stick around, yellow, mellow, white, right. And that's the color scale, the genetically determined color scale for white genetic survival. The less color you have, the greater, the lesser the threat. The less threat, less color. More color, more threat. More genetic power to cause white genetic annihilation. And I say this has a lot to do with why President Obama is systematically attacked, because he represents, sitting right there in the White House, coming to the podium to speak. He is an example, a first-degree example of white genetic annihilation. His mother's white, his father was a black man. A black man from Kenya, a crystal black man from Kenya. And you don't see anything white in President Obama, because white is a genetic recessive state, a genetically vulnerable state. It's a mutation from black. So if we don't take the discussion to that level, I believe it's going to be catastrophic for us as black people. I mean, we need to open up the discussion and insist upon the issue of racism, white supremacy being put on the table front and center. And we really should be demanding that President Obama, instead of running away from it, that he has to face up to it. As I listened to President Obama speak about immigration and all the things that he wanted to see happen for the Hispanic immigrants who come and work hard, and he wants them to have education and health care and housing and be able to achieve the so-called American dream, I would like to see President Obama come and speak so forthrightly about what he wants to see for black people, because he understands black people have been confronted with racism, white supremacy, since they were brought to these shores.
I have a question I want to get in on that I just want to make sure I include, because you always talk about that this is a local, national, global system, racism, white supremacy, and that we should be saying that this is terrorism that is being waged against black people worldwide, just so that people don't think that this is something exclusive to Ferguson or New York or Cleveland. NPR did a report on racism in Brazil in the last 10 days. For folks who listen to our Saturday program, you heard this last Saturday. But the report ended, they were talking about police violence against black people in Brazil. And the report ended, they said, there is a saying that black meat is cheaper. People don't get shocked to see a dead black person because the person in their minds can be linked to crime, he says. And in Brazil, if a person is linked to a crime, then he can be killed. This person speaking is Nilson Bruno Filho. Hope I'm saying his name correctly. He's an Afro-Brazilian. Filho says that there is a two-tiered system in Brazil based on skin color. He says Brazil has one of the most brutal and prolonged periods of slavery in the Americas. In a way, it wasn't so long ago. I think some people still see blacks as a thing, he says. It's still a reality in our country. We have a long path ahead. This was from just last Saturday reporting in Brazil. So folks, don't think that this is just something exclusive to the United States. The commentary that you gave about President Obama in terms of him coming out this week and the immigration reform issue and him talking about what he wanted to see to help out undocumented so-called Latinos, there would be a lot of black people who would say, hey, I have never heard President Obama come out and speak that forcefully and devote a whole talk to just talking about black people and saying, I want to help out black people and do something to help out black people. We've been here a long time and we've worked really hard and we've had a lot of barriers to overcome. I've never heard him do that. President Obama is just not looking out for black people. And he seems to be going along with the system of racism, white supremacy, and, you know, shame on him. We shouldn't be supportive of him either. What would your response to that be?
Well, I would first of all say that President Obama is like a CEO of a company he doesn't own. But at the same time, he has a title of President of the United States of America. And this is supposed to be the most powerful country in the world. And so one of the things he did say, not in that speech, but he said that, you know, he has to be pushed by the different groups of people to articulate, you know, their interest. And so we have been very kind, I think, in understanding of the president, but maybe it's time for us to begin to speak aloud and speak with clarity that we want the issue of racism, white supremacy, to be on top of the table and to speak directly to what has happened to black people in this area of the world. And we want that specifically addressed, not along with everybody else's issue, because nobody else, no other group, has been the group that were enslaved in this part of the world. And so nobody else has had the exact experience, and we want to be recognized in our specific and exact history. And we want the same commitment for opportunity, and not have black people blamed for dropping out of school or black-on-black homicide. We want dropping out of school and black-on-black homicide, not making excuses for it, but when you have a population that has twice and three times and four times the level of unemployment that everybody else has, then you've got a population that is extremely frustrated, demeaned and frustrated. And so you're going to see negative behavior, especially when the system gives that population drugs and gives that population guns. So we're going to see that, but we need to tie all of that in its relationship to the dynamic of racism, white supremacy. But as long as we do not talk about specifically racism, white supremacy, as long as we even hide behind talking about police violence. The police in every society are the first line defenders of the state.
Greetings, 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 greetings. Welcome to the Code Breakers. Hope everybody is doing well, and thank you for bearing with us as we listen to the great, incomparable Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, our teacher, our ancestor, and just wanted to start off the program with those words of wisdom, as she so clearly gives us a direction on how to describe this system of racism and to be able to dissect it into its realest and simplest form. So I think I have the brothers on the line. T, are you there?
I'm here.
All right. Paradox, are you able to speak, sir? All right. So I guess he's probably still indisposed, but we're all here present. So, T, did you have, like, any quick comments that you wanted to share about the clip, about Dr. Welsing, just as a whole?
No, I think it was self-explanatory. I know... Did you attend the memorial?
Yeah, I was going to, kind of go into that right after you shared your thoughts and kind of give a shout out to, you know, the people that actually had the memorial and kind of give my thoughts about the memorial and how it went. So go ahead.
Well, no, I think I've always, you know, expressed before that it's interesting that didn't Wilson and Billy Fuller, did they ever work together? I mean, in terms of their work on racism, white supremacy.
I would say
a lot of their logic is similar.
Yeah, it's very, very similar. So they corroborated. Of course, they knew each other very, very well. As far as what she has shared, there's been plenty of conversations about racism, white supremacy, burning the midnight oil on trying to solve this problem for black people. So I would say they were probably more of dealing with constructive conversations. She shared some thoughts about, you know, how they would speak on a regular basis. And she actually attributed the book and some of her logic as far as racism to Nilla Fuller. I can actually speak very, very confident on that. So she always stated that. So I'm pretty clear on that. So, yeah, they corroborated as far as work together. I don't know if I can extend that far. Because I, you know, I don't like to speak for Mr. Fuller. You know, he's very clear on certain things. So I kind of like to make sure that I'm not speaking out of turn when it comes to his work and the things that he do. But yes, I am positive that they did cooperate together.
Definitely understood. But I think Dr. Wilson was one of the first who, with the ISIS papers, put forth the idea of white genetic annihilation as the reason for
it. That is correct. That was her analysis on the system of racism, white supremacy.
Right.
Absolutely.
I guess that was like her seminal work, right?
Yep. That was her seminal work. She had a paper that she wrote in 1970, which was extended to the ISIS papers. So the paper, if I'm not mistaken, was the color confrontation. So, sorry, go ahead.
Her doctorate, was it, do you know her paper, was it probably on something like that, her doctorate that she did?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know to the full extent of what the paper was or her dissertation as far as what she wrote on. She probably did share that. I just don't remember at this time. And, you know, I don't want to speak out of turn on that.
So talk a little bit about the Institute. Can you touch on that?
Yeah, so clearly, you know, me and Paradox, we've shared this numerous times. We are students of the Dr. Wilson Institute. Well, first, let me go back to the reason why we started off with Dr. Wilson at the very beginning. As people know that, you know, that are in the know, that on Saturday, last Saturday, March 18th, 2017, at the Thurgood Marshall Center in Washington, D.C., there was a memorial sort of like in honor of Dr. Francis Cress Wilson, not a memorial, but a program, you know, commemorating her life and, you know, and a call to action. And it was very, very interesting. That was done by Sabrina Johnson, which she does fantastic work. She is still leading the actual Wilson Institute, or facilitating, I would say, more so than leading the Dr. Wilson Institutes that we have on every second Thursday at the Blackburn Center at Howard University. So we still go and check her out, and, you know, we share our thoughts about racism, white supremacy, and try to give a breakdown of how we can combat this system. So very, very therapeutic. So if anybody that's in the DMV area, please feel free to come out on the second Thursday of each month at the Blackburn Center, Howard University, Washington, D.C. So anyway, yeah, it was, man, you know, the best thing about the program to me was that there was children there. And when I tell you that these children were on it, man, I mean, it's not so bleak if we can get the children to have a clear and concise understanding about what racism is, how racism works, and not to be fooled about what the system does to the brains of people. So, you know, there was a young gentleman there. I don't want to share his name because I don't know how, you know, that is as far as like doing that, but very gifted young speaker. I'm pretty sure he's going to be in the know pretty soon here. But he had a powerful, powerful word where he spoke about the gentrification of the mind. And he was just speaking about how Black people, and he couldn't have been no more than, I don't even know if he was like older than 12 or 13, maybe 13 at the most. He may not even been that old, but sharp, just sharp young brother. Just shared his thoughts about gentrification of the mind and how, you know, Black people or people that fall into the classification of Black, melanated people, are basically working outside of themselves as far as in this culture, in the system, and how you have basically stepped out of your mind. And we are all reacting to the system in very, very harmful ways. And the ones that we end up hurting are each other. So it was very, very powerful. Very, very powerful. Anybody that was there, they understand how powerful it was. So that was one of the great opportunity to get to see him up close and personal, because I'm pretty sure he's going places and he's going to be on the scene very, very soon. So hopefully the young sir keeps it up, stays in school and do his due diligence. But yeah, he's definitely somebody that is that I'm looking forward to seeing in the future. Yeah. So, but no, that's pretty much, I didn't have like any other things to share on that. There was like other different things that went on, but I'm sorry. Did anybody else want to speak? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I do want to ask you, I don't want to try to put this in a interrogation type mode, but I found it interesting and I want to ask you some questions because, you and Paradox were much closer to Dr. Wilson than I was, in fact. So I did want to ask you, what was your first introduction to Dr. Wilson?
My first introduction
to... How did you come across, the material world?
To her work.
Right.
Man. I first came across the ISIS papers, man, I want to say around 91, 92. I forgot the Black bookstore that's like right down the street from Howard, but that's where that's I cool. saw the book. But yeah, exactly. Cool. Yeah. And And I actually got the book probably when I was like a senior, maybe in high school. So yeah, it was one of those things where I read the book pretty early. I remember that book was out, and Shahrazad Ali, The Message to the Black Man. I forgot what her book was titled, but her book was out around the same time that Dr. Wilson's book hit the press. And I remember it was Third World Press at that time. I can remember just like it was yesterday. But I remember when I first read it, I was just like, man, this is really out there. Like, you know, this is very, very strong language, because I was extremely confused at the time. I was extremely young. I didn't have a clear understanding about what racism was or how it works. I was aware that there was an issue. And I guess I was sort of pseudo-conscious, because, you know, that was back in those days where everybody was on some self-destruction and wearing the African medallions. Remember the cloth medallions?
RGB.
RGG. Exactly. Yeah, so, I mean, it was just a fad at that time. And for any of the youngsters.
Black Power Fist pick.
Yeah, this thing runs in cycles, man. I can remember that like yesterday. Like, it was really on some pseudo. I was probably trying to be extra friendly to a nice young lady at that time that I thought that maybe she thought I was smart if I had some conscious books that I could show her. Oh man, but yeah, so I mean, it was
that's
weird.
Part of the journey. I mean, that's
yeah,
that's
it was. Cool. I was very confused at that time because my intentions were not, you know, to get more knowledgeable. But I can remember, one of the things that I remembered at that time, because I was a person that played sports, was that when she brought up the sports analogies about how sports are just like a translation of racism. And how, you know, the brown balls are the big balls, and you know the white balls are the small balls, and how that plays out as far as the psychology of what whiteness is, and how they view the system, and how they view black people, and that when she, you know, I came to get this understanding later. I never did kind of understand the tie-in to the genetic survival. But when you think about it from a psychological subconscious point of view, then it all starts to make sense because people are motivated psychologically to do things. And I think that that's where I'm at right now, just understanding how ahead of the game and how deep and how intelligent of a genius. It's true. She's a genius. Mr. Fuller is too. And I think that's why people always call Mr. Fuller a doctor, because, you know, he always get called that. And I know he doesn't say anything, but, you know, he's a genius in his own right as far as the philosophy is breaking it down, the system, and giving that clear logic about how the system breaks down and everything. But yeah, that was my first introduction to her. I was very, very young. I was under 20 at the time, so still very confused about racism, though.
Oh yeah, that's very interesting. And then to see how later on you were actually able to participate in her institute, you know, I'm sure something you didn't foresee that coming at that time, obviously. So.
Well, you know, what's interesting though is that, you know, she always shared how people would think that, you know, people would come to her 20 years later, like literally, that's what ended up happening with me. And she would say that people always come to her and say, "Well, I thought you was crazy. I thought you was out of your mind, but now I see." And it was just like, you know, as people be in church and be like, "Hey, man," I mean, just sitting there, I was just shaking my head because I just couldn't believe it that it came full circle like that, you know.
Yeah.
And just to share that with her, and I remember just talking with her after one of the classes one time and just, you know, reiterating that, you know, even when I first heard you, you know, I told her that I just, you know, I thought it was crazy, you know, like, you know, I believed that black people could be racist. I had all kinds of thoughts in my head. Like, what is this woman talking about? She's talking crazy. You know what I mean? Like, you know, what grandma doing? You know, this name calling, just going crazy,
but,
man, because you're just so confused about racism.
Though.
Huh?
You were still drawn to it, though.
Yeah, because it, you know, the thing about Dr. Welsing that is really, that I wish that people could really understand, that to meet her and to be in her presence, it's almost like you couldn't be that. If you, I know people would look at her words and they would become misconstrued as far as like the message that she's trying to convey. But I guarantee you, if you go in and you listen to this woman speak, which, you know, I just feel blessed that we was able to do this. If you listen to Dr. Wells and speak about racism, white supremacy, I don't care if you was white, you know, brown, black, Asian, you know, the word Arab, whatever. You can be from wherever on the planet. You will walk out enlightened. There was times where there were white people there that would sit the whole time and listen to her. And she would explain it, but just talk the same way, very calm, don't raise her voice. And, you know, of course, there were people that came in and just be like, you know, "Dr. Welsing, I don't agree with you. I think it's this, I think it's that." And she would just be like, "Mm-hmm, I understand." But then she just, always stay on the system. Always stay on the system. Always stay on what the goal is ahead of time. And I just, you know, I'm just going to just share my opinion about it. You know, I wish that we were understanding her a little bit more so she could have furthered her theory a little bit more. But we always stayed stuck because the system has done a wonderful job keeping us in a state of just illusion and delusion. So we'll have people that will still think that we are in a system of racism, white supremacy, but not know what that really entails, if you understand what I mean. So somebody would say something like, well, I ain't going to be doing nothing with these crackers saying, and Dr. Wilson would be like, oh, hold on, calm down. just like an elder should, and just be like, you know, the truth is that the system as of right now, the way the system has basically developed off pure violence, if they walked in with guns up, guns in here, and we were sitting in here and they said we had to disperse, guess what? We would put our hands up and we would have to disperse, regardless if they had to kill one of us or not. And that's Dr. Welsing. That's Dr. Welsing. It was never combative. Never combative. Never. I never seen her have an argument with anybody, no matter what the question was. And that was her genius, to be able to share, convey the thoughts about racism, white supremacy, very clear, very succinctly, and to be able to share thoughts and not have it to where it was combative, disagreeable, anything of that nature. And I think that people really don't believe that the Dr. Welsing is a doctor. She is a certified doctor. Like, she went to school for this. And if I'm not mistaken, what I would suggest people do to see how much of a genius the Dr. Welsing is, she debated Dr. Shockley, I think, the Stanford. You know, he's like this so-called professor that did this theory about how black people were inferior, wrote a whole book about it. People was trying to really reiterate this whole deal. And I mean, Dr. Welsing and her genius just shut this man all the way down. It was not even a contest. It should be on YouTube. Please check it out, where you can see Dr. Welsing do her due diligence as far as deconstructing and basically shutting it all down. Like, excuse me, sir. No, the things that you're doing. And then it went into analyzing white people, because that never happens, right? It's always us reacting. So she redirected it and put it right there. This is why this is. This is why this is the case. This is why this has happened. And just basically just broke it all the way down. And it was just like, by the end of it, I think it was the Lee Brown program, if I'm not mistaken. Tony Brown Journal. That's it. Yeah, so it's the Tony Brown Journal, if I'm not mistaken, and it was a debate. It has to be like the early 80s, maybe 1980, 1981. And I mean, Dr. Welsing just, man, black self-respect is more powerful than a nuclear bomb, is what she would say. That was just one of the powerful woman, powerful ancestor. Very, 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 very strong. Very, very strong. But yeah, did you have like anything else you wanted to share before we like kind of get into the meat of the program?
I do want to give peace and blessings to the ancestor, Dr. Frances Cress Welsing. She obviously contributed a great deal of knowledge and wealth to black people worldwide. And even though she has made the transition, she has left a body of work that can be studied for a lifetime and many lifetimes. And so she lives on through her work. And so that is one of the great things about when our ancestors pass on, they leave us work that we can study, and hopefully we can use that work to get a clearer and better understanding of the system as a whole, and even possibly, move those ideas forward into another realm. So,
right on. I like to give her definition of racism. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Go ahead. Go ahead. Welcome, Paradox.
Yeah. I'm only gonna say a couple of things, but before you do a definition, but the event for her was very, like you said before, it's very powerful. It was a great event. It had a beautiful altar for her. They had some African priestess there who did a beautiful ceremony for her. Like you said before, the young kids did a really good job, and the event was good. They had some beautiful photos of her, and they even had Mr. Fuller. Had big giant posters of his definitions and had big posters of her 10 stops as far as how we should behave and some of the speaking that they did was pretty good as well. Just wanted to say that.
Agreed. So just wanted to give a functional definition of racism, white supremacy, that Dr. Welzin has laid out for us, and it's pretty long, but we think that it's very, very important to share her thoughts. And like me, Paradox, and T have shared before on previous programs, she's the reason that code breakers exist, mainly, and then secondly will be Mr. Fuller. So they're the two basically genesis of this particular program. I don't think that if we ever did not listen to both of them as far as getting a deeper understanding about racism, white supremacy, this program most likely would not exist. So, you know, shout out to them by allowing us to kind of continue in this vein and be able to, you know, elocute our thoughts and kind of give our perspective of how the system is as far as like the next generation is coming up after them. And hopefully we can, you know, keep it going and, you know, create a bridge to understanding. This is Dr. Welzin's definition of racism. Racism, white supremacy, is the local and global power system and dynamic structured and maintained by persons who classify themselves as white, whether consciously or subconsciously determined, which consists of patterns of perception, logic, symbol formation, thought, speech, action, and emotional response, as conducted simultaneously in all areas of people activity. These areas are economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and without further ado, war, for the ultimate purpose of white genetic survival and to prevent white genetic annihilation on planet Earth, a planet upon which the vast, overwhelming majority of people are classified as non-white, black, brown, red, and yellow, by white-skinned people, and all of the non-white people are genetically dominant in terms of skin coloration compared to the genetic recessive white-skinned people. That's her functional definition of racism. I agree with it wholeheartedly. Do you guys have any thoughts on that before we move forward? Yes, sir.
If you can, if you don't mind, give I guess you're gonna probably do it after, if Pete makes a comment as well. Yeah. But just explaining, I think, I hate to call stuff deep, but you know, just kind of explain her, you know, just kind of explain her logic in the sense that she's really getting at a very core function at a psychologist level or psychiatrist level. Because I think that's why it kind of gets lost sometimes.
how she's going mm-hmm. and really studying white people. And it's just, you know, I know sometimes people may get kind of get lost, you know, in some of the information because of what she's really focusing on. You know what I'm saying? But anyway, I just want to say that real quick.
Yeah, well, you know, I can't say that you know, I'm a, you know, I give like an expert opinion about what Dr. Wells's theory is. I mean, we didn't talk that often for me to get that deep into knowledge on that. However, I have listened to her enough to elocute that she did have a clear understanding about what motivated white people to do what they did. And her theory, which hasn't been picked up as of yet by another psychologist, and I think that there is a reason for that, because I know that when white people feel threatened, you know, they attack or they demonetize you in a way where, and you know, anybody that's in the whole black conscious sphere and things of that nature kind of understand what that means, as far as when you start to speak and do things that may not be so popular or veer into the controversial, that there is a way to shut you down and not give you a platform to where you will not be heard. So I think that's the reason why there's a lot of fear about what she has basically spoken about, and the reason why a lot of people don't continue to speak in that way. So they use different words or they use more of a convoluted language where it's not spoken so plainly. See, white supremacy cuts at the core of what this is, because that is not confusion. White supremacy gives it a definition for what you see on the news every day. So when you see drone strikes, you know, in Afghanistan, Iraq, or any other country where there's no white people, do you understand that that's white supremacy on the move? When you see, you know, Brexit, you know, earlier this year, and, you know, white people being upset about immigration, you understand that that's white supremacy on the move. And when you see how she accurately called the presidency here in these United States of America, Inc., as Mr. Reed so aptly always put it, she gave the actual confirmation that was going to be the president. I was there. I was front and center. Heard it. And actually, you probably heard me laugh, because I actually laughed out loud. I just didn't think that was a possibility, but she proved to be prophetic, as we see. As she called it, that was white supremacy on the move. So I think it's a lot easier to see it now, because it's like right in your face, where there's a little bit less confusion. But I think that what ends up happening, just like anything else, because of how powerless we are to do anything effectively in the system, we will get into the attacks on other non-white people, where you will start to hear things like, well, yeah, put some walls up, or yeah, keep people out of here. It's the LGBT community. They're the ones that are causing this issue. Well, hell, you know, if single mothers could raise their kids right. And you start to forget that all of these are just symptoms of the system of racism, white supremacy. And that's how Dr. Wilson would always kind of bring it back to what the system is all about. This is something that they're driven to do psychologically, you see, subconsciously or consciously, basically prop up the system for their genetic survival. That's the theory. So if somebody's doing something that they feel they need to do to survive, then they're willing to do anything. They're willing to do anything, go to any measure. Now, you're speaking about, you know, even in a definition, it talks about how they are a vast minority, you know, under 10% of the population on the planet, but they hold the power on this planet for right now. So what does that look like? What do you have to do to maintain that kind of hold on the globe, where most of the planet speaks your language, which is European English. There are other European languages, of course, but English is one of the European languages that's primarily spoken across the globe, the language of commerce. Your customs are picked up by everybody else around the globe that clearly are not white. How do you effectively change people's perspective without extreme violence and extreme manipulation of those people that stays in those lands and a copy a different space than you? And that's where she was ahead of the game as far as racism, white supremacy, in my honest opinion. So hopefully I elocuted that in the most clearest way as I could. So, T, did you have, like, any examples that you wanted to give to Dr. Frances Cress Wilson's theory about the psychological impact of racism?
Yeah, I mean, it's heavy. It's a heavy one. I think you covered it pretty well. You did a good job on that, and I don't want to detract from that. So I'll leave it there, what you stated.
Cool. So we wanted to kind of, like, I guess, get into a little bit about what's going on. Paradise, did you have anything else you wanted to kind of, like, you know, share about the, any other thoughts about the program that we went to, the commemoration?
Say the last part again.
You wanted to share any further thoughts about the commemoration that we went to on the 18th?
No, nothing. I mean, nothing besides that that we love her and that we miss her.
We do.
I won't say that.
We have extreme love for her. Absolutely. She's thoroughly missed.
And this is a time that, you know, luckily she left some things here for us. And she's still here, obviously. But luckily she left some things for us. Because, man, without her knowledge, almost, you know, she was necessary within, you know, to be born, to be here, to be created, to be a part, you know, of this system, to at least give us a guide at this point to try to navigate through this, you know. So I will say I do appreciate that, you know, that she did dedicate her entire life basically to studying white people, to studying the most powerful system that the planet has ever seen. You know, we don't know what the future holds and who's going to be in charge going forward, but right at this moment, you know, for her to be here was a great thing. I just leave it there.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I guess we can get to some of the things that we would like to discuss. We may not get all our points through, but where would you guys like to start? You like to start with the post-apocalyptic planet when whites ruled? Which one would y'all like to kind of get a deep dive into?
The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk
Radio Network. Well, we got a break coming up, so we'll probably get back to you guys in just a moment. This is the Code Breakers.
Talk Radio since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Welcome back to the Code Breakers. Thank you for the actual break. We appreciate it. You can hear us on Black Talk Radio. And if you would like to call and share your thoughts, please feel free to give us a call at 1-866-510-9025. Or you can dial the number 704-802-5056. Hit ** to unmute if you would like to share your thoughts about the actual program as it go ahead. So, all right, fellas, what would you guys like to discuss? You would like to get into some of the actual topics here?
Yeah, if you want to go with the black politics as a solution to black self-respect, or maybe blacks, you know, black people asking poor people for money.
Well, we can get into that a little bit later. That's one that
you want to say that.
Yeah, I think that black politics. When we say black politics, I like to really know exactly what that means, because, like I said, a couple of programs back, I think that when we start to speak about blackness and who's black, what is black, what's the black solution, I think that there are a lot of different viewpoints when it comes down to who is suggesting what idea and who feels like that idea is the best for them. So that's where it gets problematic for me personally when we speak about black politics and, you know, needing to represent the black politics, especially in a system that was designated and designed to mistreat people, regardless of who you are. So just because you have an elected official that is classified as black, like you, you feel like this person is able to do the things within their particular office for you, that they're going to represent you in the fullest. And I think that that's problematic, and it has been detrimental to our understanding of how racism works and how racism is basically enforced on this planet. So you guys have any thoughts on that as far as black politics? You think that it is a solution? You think that we can do black politics? You think it works?
I don't think it can work personally, just for the simple fact. The main fact for me is that you have a government posing, well, a corporation posing as a government. So you are beholden to the corporation first, not necessarily the people. I mean, Congress. Now, talking on a federal level, obviously, but obviously you have state houses in all 50 states. But Congress are basically like your, I guess you say, your shareholders. And then your executive is your CEO. And so, I mean, it's set up just like a corporate structure. And so there are certain things. I mean, if you just take Cynthia McKinney, for instance, who many feel that she was a staunch advocate for so-called black people worldwide. And she did a lot of great works and spoke out on a lot of injustices during her tenure. But look where she is now. So you see that the system is set up to handle those type of situations where you have people who believe that they can come in and actually affect change, whether that be, you know, in a spook who sat by the door type strategy, or just simply through benevolence and people supporting them. The system will take care of that. So I think we've seen, I mean, that's just one example. There, history is replete with many examples where black people, so-called black people, have entered into politics and have been essentially deposed once it was discovered, you know, whether they were going in with a so-called pro-black message or if they went in under the guise of something else. Eventually, in the case of the former, someone going in with a pro-black message, you obviously have people who have more power than you who may say you need to curtail your message to a certain degree. And if you get outside of those parameters, then you'll be dealt with. In the case of the latter, someone going in that doesn't necessarily have a pro-black message, but switches it up later on, it gets away from the constituency that they originally had propagated when they ran for office, say white people, for instance. Same thing happens to them. The people that you were your constituency, excuse me, will look at that and say, hey, you know, what's going on? We voted for you to do X, Y, Z. And next term, you are likely out of office, or you could be brought up on charges for something. So it's been tried, and there is no solution, as Paradox would say. There probably are solutions, and that's something else that maybe he can kind of express thoughts on, because I thought that was interesting how he made it analogous to a mathematical equation. We have expressions and we have solutions. Two completely different things, two completely different meanings. And so my point is that I'm not going to downplay anybody's suggestion or what they think may be a solution. So we go under the VGQ, Victims Guarantee Qualification.
Absolutely.
Operation. So, but that's just my thoughts on the matter. And anyone else can obviously chime in as well. So,
Paradox, you wanted to share your perspective on that, or you're not somewhere where you can speak right now?
I just say this real quick, is that what TJ said does tie into that initial bullet point, the post-apocalyptic part, when whites rule, just because, you know, and DC, you do really do a good job, I think, of explaining that white people literally took over the planet. And, you know, I don't know why that's not a... They're not stupid people, apparently, or something, because to be able to assert your authority across a whole planet and no one seems to be of the wiser in the sense that the leaders understand it. Everyone gets it. I'm not saying it at the highest levels, but it's literally apocalyptic. They went in over the entire planet and destroyed it, reprocessed it, turned all of us into labor to extract resources from all over the world for this small group of people, while they lay out on beaches trying to get black.
You know, I sent this out to you guys earlier, and it was sort of like it just hit me like a ton of bricks, because I listen to a lot of people, and I think there are a lot of people that are doing great work that are really concerned about the black, what I would call the black issues or the black conundrum. I don't even know what to call it outside of, because even to say the word black, because we are black people, but we are black people through a certain lens, through history, it's been colored for us. So that's part of the post-apocalyptic part, that you take groups of people, you fit them into this, and then this is what they are, and they form a culture behind it. And that's what happened to us. So when I hear people say, well, we need to do this, we need to do that, we need to do this, we need to do that. And it's like, you need to be like them. You need to be like how white people are. And I think that was not really shared or reiterated is that how are we supposed to compete or solve our problems in a hostile environment? We are not allowed to be hostile, but to each other. We are not allowed to mistreat on a mass level. And this is the basis of our extreme confusion, is what I wrote to you guys earlier. And I just, to me, when we talk about solutions, the reason why it's so hard to formulate any kind of black politic is that you have to be hostile. You have to be ruthless. You have the president of the United States. His name is Donald J. Trump. People would say that this man is a very direct, harsh man. Somebody that would be described as hostile. Like, very clearly that he has a hostile tone when he speaks to people. Especially people that disagree with him or that are not agreeable to his ideals or viewpoints. And when you're dealing with people that are already compromised, which is what we are, because we don't sit in the realms of power, we can't determine things on a mass level. I'm not talking about getting individual favor within the system. I'm saying where you can make moves, where you can say, no, 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 you can't come here. Gentrification is not happening here. Not at all. So I think that one of the things that I want to make sure of is, because I think that this could get confusing for people when we speak like this, I want to make sure that I'm not talking in doom and gloom, but I want to kind of give people a broader view of what you're dealing with, so you don't hold it against other victims of racism when they respond differently than you, is what my concern is. Because I think what ends up happening is we get into conversations with each other, and then somebody may disagree with what your viewpoint is just because the system is what it is. We're not dealing in a system where we can actually determine our destinies on a broad level. I'm talking about a broad level, not individually. I think individually there are great things that people can do. I think the individual black people have done many great things, but you cannot have people that have not moved the needle economically, educationally, and been able to determine their lot in life and protect themselves in the system that is basically determined to attack them on a regular basis. See, the system is set up to attack. So I think that's where we get confused at. This is just my opinion. Mr. Reed, if you want to kind of share your thoughts a little bit, you know, on that, then, you know, please feel free, sir.
Oh, okay. Well, I just want to ask the question. I sure, take the viewpoint, why I pay attention to politics. Let me answer that question. It's because that's the early warning system of what the people in control of the planet about to do. If you want to know what's coming down the pipe, it don't, people say, oh, this snuck up on me. No, no, no. They all, like I've heard Brother Dave always say, they always tell you what they're going to do. And how do they tell you? Through law, through proposals, legislative proposals, and arguing back and forth and trying to get something passed. So Republicans been telling you that they're going to take away your Section 8 and your food stamps. Now they in power. Now they plan to do it. So that's an early warning system. Number one, politics. I feel like it also in the nine areas of people activity area controls all the other areas, because they can pass a law to make sex legal. The exchange of money for sex, you know, legal, like out in Nevada and stuff. See, so they can pass laws and make people activity legal or illegal, and then they had the power to enforce it. So to me, politics, because of its ability to pass laws, controls every other people activity area. And I would agree with the assessment that we have not in the long-term view, we have not been winning in the people activity area of politics. Therefore, it makes sense to me that we're losing in every other column as well. So recognizing these facts, what do we do? Do we stop engaging in any people activity area that we're not winning in? Because, I mean, should we take our ball and go home? That's the question right there. Acknowledging that we ain't winning on the chessboard or on the battlefield and we're losing in all these people activity areas, what are victims to do then? What's their option?
Yeah, and I appreciate the clarification, because I think there are probably people that's listening that feel that way. So let me be clear that I think that everybody should do their due diligence. So if politics is your realm of expertise and you feel the need to do that. I am not saying that people should sit on their hands. That is not what I'm saying. What I'm speaking to is the system overall. Any of those things that you just spoke about, as far as like laws being passed, things that are being done. If there was somebody that was adverse to that particular view and they're trying to help people that are classified as Black, normally there are provisions in place that need to be kind of accessed, that there's some kind of compromise made when you're dealing with politics. We live in a country where people are defined by race, or people are defined by issues within that particular group. So that's where it becomes problematic for me, as far as it being something that is a doable solution for all Black people. But I do see the benefit of practicing politics. I don't think that you should totally veer off. I'm not saying that at all. I think that we should all do the best that we can do within the system that we have right now. My concern is normally with victims getting into it with each other, even if there's a disagreement, if there's a slightly different viewpoint on an idea, because guess what? If we're all about trying to help Black people, or we're trying to help people that are in the classification of Black or descendants of slaves or whatever the case may be, however you want to define it, we shouldn't have animosity towards each other if we're both trying to talk about solutions to the problem of racism, white supremacy, and especially if we both have a belief that there is a such thing as racism, or, you know, global colonization of people on the planet that are not white. So yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. I do think that the problem is a little bit more bigger than that, but I think that definitely there should be movement. You should make the best out of the situation that's at hand. I just don't want Black people to blame each other for the situations that they're in. And I think that a lot of times what ends up happening is people will go insular and say, well, you know, you don't do this, you don't do that, and you don't do this, and you don't provide, or you're not woke, or you do different things that I do, so you're a coon, you this, you that, you know what I mean? So the name calling gets into vogue, and then you got two groups of people that are trying to benefit and do good for Black people, but we can't get past a disagreement because we're too at odds with each other. So that was my primary concern, or the reason why I shared that.
Hey, DC.
Yes, sir.
I just say this, that and maybe I wasn't clear earlier, but there are no Black politics. There's only the politics of white supremacy, period. I just wanted to make sure that I'm overly clear on when we're talking about the system of racism, the global system, and that white folks have conquered this planet. Anything below that is a totally separate conversation. So when I'm talking about politics, I'm talking about that politics, just so I'm clear.
What about you, T? You got something you wanted to share on the clarification that Mr. Reed wanted to share with us?
No, I'm good. We can, you know, we can continue on that topic, whatever you guys decide.
So, now moving on to my favorite topic, and I think we have listed it as Stop Asking the Poorest black people for money. One of the things that will make me get into a disagreement and break code a little bit with other victims of racism, people that are classified as black, is when there is this desire to, and I'm not talking about people that are helping or people that are doing things that are designed to benefit black people, but I'm talking about when we are clearly, there are clearly people that they are dealing in access of black dysfunction, so to speak. And they are benefiting from it. And that, to me, that's where I have a definite problem with other victims mistreating other victims, especially when they may be a little bit more confused than this particular person that is talking to them, and they are trying to extract resources or to mistreat the person by taking from them when they already have so little. For instance, prosperity preaching, you know, no problem with the whole idea of trying to make a living and live, you know, through that particular vessel, if that's what you choose to do. Where it becomes problematic for me is when you have people that are in the congregation, and this is just an example. This is just an example. Hopefully it's a clear example. But you have people that's in the congregation that don't even have a car, don't have a ride to church, and they would still give their last to the preacher that is clearly benefiting more than everybody else that's within his parishionership. Like, I think that the people that need the help the most should get the most help. And if we have people that can provide it or spare it, then that's what we should do. Just as an aside, I just think that the code is our code is off when it comes down to helping the most vulnerable black people. And it keeps us in a state of perpetual conflict with each other. Because when those children that's from those particular situations get older, they grow up, and then they do things that we deem are disrespectful or things that we think that they shouldn't be doing, then you just think about, you know, how they were not able to garner their resources. Now, there's a whole host of reasons why people are in the situations that they're in. So we can't just say it's a one-off for everybody. But all I'm saying is if there's someone that can get assisted or this and that other, the least you can do is not ask them to give more to what you are already doing, that you could just say, hey, you know, keep what you got. Don't give me the last of what you have. And I just think that it's very, very predatorial, the things that we do to each other, because we're trying to exist in a system that is based off predators. This is a system. This is the jungle. This is something that people do to financially feed off each other. You got to feed. You got to do it. You got to be ruthless. And if I can't be ruthless within the system with the other people that are mistreating me, then I can just mistreat other victims of racism. I mean, that's easy food. And that's what I have a problem with. So that's some of my thoughts, and that's some of my early thoughts on that topic. Tia Paradox, do you guys have anything you want to share?
Yeah, you know what's interesting about capitalism and where so-called black people fall within that system is that because we don't have, in most instances, access to generational wealth or even access to more liquid funds that we can readily tap into to start an enterprise or start a business, what a lot of us are left with are scraps, essentially. And so we have to pick up the pieces and find a market, carve out a market amongst ourselves. And like I said,
hello.
can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Dropped off. So because we generally do not have the, and of course there'll be the argument or the pitch that black people spend too much money on clothes, shoes, cars, et cetera, et cetera. And that may or may not be the case, but when you look at the wealth disparities and the fact that black people do not have access to these resources as far as tapping the capital, because that is what you need in this type of system to truly exploit, aka succeed and become wealthy or rich. When you don't have access to that, you're left looking amongst yourselves. And so you can get into things like the church and prosperity gospel. You can get into a conscious hustle. And the thing of it is that it's not necessarily all bad, because it's a funny thing about it, it's a double-edged sword, because there are people who they get uplifted when they go to church, hearing someone preach to them. That can be uplifting to their soul, their spirit. You know, there are people who get lots of knowledge and information from people who lecture in the realm of so-called conscious material. And so that is a market that is readily available to our people. So it's easy to see how that could actually become. The fortunate thing of it is that it becomes a question of what are we doing to ultimately try to resolve the system of racism, white supremacy, because that's what it always comes back to. It, you know, it really is, in my view, a tough dilemma. It's something that I think could be talked about ad nauseum, because there are two sides of there are people on both sides of the track, so to speak. People that are pro and people that are anti.
Well, yeah, let me say this, and I want you to kind of give me a little bit more direction, because I know that you feel a little bit different than I do. How can it be ethical when, like I said, the system itself, you have to, the basis of it is greed. So how can you provide the ethics that are necessary, or gauge the ethics that are necessary, to where you do not mistreat the most vulnerable of your particular group? I mean, I would still kind of put this in the same situation when people talk about be like other different groups of non-white people, like the Asians or the people that's from the middle, what is called the so-called Middle East. And you see how there are groups within those groups that mistreat each other. Hispanics, they got people that are of so-called Hispanic origin, people that's from South America, black and other ethnicities mixed in with it, that, you know, mistreat each other on these food forms. They get people to capture people and make them work for pennies, but they're doing it to get paid. These are the same people doing it to each other. You see the confusion? But they're part of the larger system, though. They're benefiting the larger system of racism and white supremacy. That's the reason why you can pay, you know, $2 or $2.50 for your apples at your local supermarket, because somebody else is picking it for you at a very, very cheap rate. You're not out picking apples yourself. You're going to the grocery store and you're buying them. So how can we reconcile a system like that? You see what I'm saying? Like, it all ties in. It's all tied in. So, you know, even us, when we go and we do things, we're all part of this particular brutal system. That's what I'm saying. I'm just asking people to be more aware, more cognizant, not to feel just totally guilty, but just understand that it is all encompassing. It has its hands and hooks into everything. You know, even the computers that we have, the chips that they use, how they get these computers created. You know, they got sweatshops in Hong Kong, and you're talking about people trying to be like Asian folks. What are you talking about? Most Asian people are poor. All right, so we got another break, so we'll see you on the other side to continue the discussion. This is the Code Breakers.
Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium.
Thank you for staying tuned to the Code Breakers. Welcome back. We are the Code Breakers. So T, did you have anything that you wanted to share about the last comment that I was making?
Oh yeah. So the thing of it is that that's a great comparison you make between, you know, other cultures, so-called races, mistreating their own folks, and obviously we fall, so-called black people fall to that same dilemma. But on a larger, from a larger perspective, the fact that you have a system that's set up to where your time, you know, that you spend on a job or doing some type of trade, you're paid a certain amount of so-called money, but that money has already predetermined, the value's already predetermined. You've never even met the people or the people responsible or the person responsible for setting the value of the so-called money.
Exactly.
So your time and your labor has already been compromised. So what you believe to be your time and energy, what you believe to be the worth of that is actually, whether we want to believe it or not, is determined by the paycheck that you get. That instead of you determining, you know, and I'm not saying this is a solution or something that is a, if you went into economics, it's not something I'm saying that is a something that should be done. But if you get into a barter type system where you have your own labor, where you go out and you might make crafts or you might sell goods that you labored for or farmed or produced yourself, at least you have more of a sort of a say-so in determining the value of what you're putting. But when someone comes in and says, you know what, we're coming in D.C., it looks this all the time, we're coming in, we're going to take over this landmass. We know that you guys were, let's talk about the Aztecs, for example.
Yeah, you were Aztecs, you were the Comanches, you were the Apaches.
Yeah, we know you traded, your currency was cocoa beans, right? That was very important to you, chocolate. But we're going to come in and we're going to make you start using our so-called currency. I don't care what you did before that. This is what you're going to do, or you're going to die.
Well, I was just about to say that. What if you disagree? What if I don't want to use your currency? Now what? Now what you going to do? See, that's what I'm talking about. Because, see, there's disagreements. See, people think that there's the Trail of Tears. It's clear. There's the Trail of Tears. There's the Spanish-American Indian War. This is not something that D.C. made up. This is not something that T made up. There are ramifications for that. The Louisiana Purchase. People act like Texas is some old southern state. Texas was part of Mexico. Texas didn't become part of the United States until 1830-something. The South is here. This is the South. It was only 13 colonies. This is what white supremacy is. Like, you have to understand there were people already inhabiting the landmass. 500 so-called Indian tribes of people of color, which some people would be included in that look like black people, that were massacred, killed, and then they reformed people and told them, you're this, this is what you're going to be called, I don't care what you think, this is what you are. And we're going to police you too. And we're going to make it a crime to be black, wherever you stand. It's against the law. We're talking up to the 60s, man. And then Mr. Reed, to continue the abolitionist movement, slavery never ended. So the language get crossed up. So people are being put into slavery on a daily basis. And we still allow this to happen. That's the system that we're living in. That's reality. That's the truth. And the fact that, you know, you can have a awards ceremony of people parading around in nice suits, you know, great clothes, nice television program, and have a program about modern day slavery and then give out awards for it, is that's what I'm saying. It's just there's so many contradictions that our mind, we become adjusted to it. And we just think, okay, yeah, that's just the way it is. And then we get into our corners and then we have these discussions about what we need to do about the system of racism. But it's never really real about how we really need to examine the system. Like, we really need to take a hard look at what's going on, what's currently going on. They have a program right now called American Crime. Are you familiar with it, T?
Yes, indeed.
So they got a program on American Crime. This year, this particular program is about slavery here, about people picking your tomatoes, your apples, your fruits and vegetables that they have in grocery stores. And white people are the sole responsible party in that particular issue, the reason why that is happening. The exploitation, I mean. But who looks like they should be getting the blame for the mistreatment on that program? That's what I mean by psychologically showing stuff like that. If you didn't know any better, it would be the non-white people, correct? The people that were so-called, we would call Hispanic. People that are from South America, Mexico, coming across the border to work. And then they come here and then they move up the chains and then they become an overseer for white people. But they're doing it for money, though. They're practicing economics their way, the way that they're able to survive. That's what I'm saying. The hostile environment. Just pay attention who you can be hostile to. Now they're showing this program where they're trying to kind of, you know, throw some propaganda in there where there's this this white gentleman, young gentleman, that is the only white person there, by the way, that is being mistreated by other non-white people because he is a fiend on drugs and he's just like everybody else. And this is his experience and he's falling into the same mistreatment. One person doesn't make up for a collective genocide of a people. So regardless of anything else that's happening to that white person, the white people that basically forgot about this particular white person and his mistreatment is the reason why that is happening to him. So it's still white people's fault at the end of the day. And that's what I don't want to be lost. That's my concern. Because at the end of the day, the system is a cycle. It's a cycle of brutality. It's a cycle of mistreatment. There's no way around it, is what I'm saying. And if the code breakers is to do anything, is to kind of push out Dr. Wells's point of view as far as they are motivated to do this. This is something that would not stop until they're neutralized. And when I say they, I'm talking about the people that have classified themselves as white and everybody else that are responding to their particular system that are not white. And it has driven us mentally insane, where we would mistreat each other, we would do things to each other, we would talk crazy about each other, and we would blame each other for the ills that have been created outside of our paradigm originally. That's what I'm saying. That's the brutality of the system.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned it. What was the prison show you mentioned?
The prison show?
Yeah, you mentioned.
Well, you're talking about American Crime, the program.
Well,
yeah.
even Locked Up or something like that.
Oh yeah.
It was interesting. There was a show that. Well, this was on 60 Minutes. It was a documentary on the fact that these prisoners in Malawi, Africa, had been nominated for a Grammy. Essentially, some white people went to this prison here because they heard that the so-called black people there made good music. And they created an album. Now, this is a prison that is designed to hold 330 people. And apparently in each given time, they have 2,000 or more. I mean, to the point where people are sleeping on top of each other, head to toe. Now, does that sound like diagrams that we've seen of slave ships, for example? Because it does to me. But anyway. So, I mean, but if you watch the documentary, I think if you go to, let's see, 60 Minutes, I guess that's CBS. But if you go and watch the documentary, you might be able to get it online. It's called the Zomba, Z as in zebra, O, M as in Mary, B as in boy, A as in apple, Zomba Prison Project. Music Prison Project, something like that. Anyhow, when you watch the documentary, you see these guys, these white guys who go there, and they're talking to the female prisoners, and they're talking to the male prisoners. It's almost like they're trying to leave you with this warm, fuzzy feeling inside, like, oh, you know, we're going here, we're exposing the great music that they are doing. They got nominated for a Grammy. But are these people getting compensated for this? Do they even know what is actually taking place when these white people come there? Because they should have had missionaries coming there. People classified as white missionaries, or they just love them. You know, they give them hugs, everything. So do they even know the gravity of what's going on? These people classified as black in the prison. I don't think they understand the gravity of what's going on.
What can you do when things are defined for you? I mean, what are we doing when your actions, your motivations, your mindset is through a white European lens? Dr. Ani wrote a book called Urugu, where it goes deeply into detail, and she's another person that I forgot to mention. Dr. Marimba Ani wrote the book Urugu, where it talks about the cultural manifestation of white supremacy, how they have defined things and they have been able to shape your reality because of it. So your so-called dreams, your aspirations, your ideals of what success is, what failure is all built on a paradigm that white people have created, literally. Like, literally.
Listen, here's what speaks to that, too. Most, I just want to because it kind of drives what you're saying home, is that most of these people at this prison don't speak English, but the legal system is in English. So, in other words, they're going, if they even get a court date, and they go to court, which is an English system, by the way,
mm-hmm.
but if they go, they can't, they don't even speak their language. So can you imagine going to court here, as messed up as it is in the U.S., and they're speaking a foreign language that you have no idea what they're saying? Bad enough that it's already unjust. But none of that is talked about, right? It's talking about the music and the singing and the dancing. But I just thought I'd mention that because that brings home the point that when you colonize someone's mind and you basically set out how you want this individual to behave and perform, and mainly through the use of language and then force, man, things can really get confusing.
I really want to hammer this point because this is all about the psychological attacks that we have experienced while we have been here in America, how we have been defined globally as one group that is not monolithic. We are all not the same. We all don't have the same experiences, but we are forced into the classification of Black. I stand on that because it's true. It's true. You did not decide to be Black people, but we are Black people, if that makes sense. And that's why it's so difficult. And you have people disagreeing about what is Black and who's Black, and you ain't Black, you ain't dark enough. I mean, it's almost amazing to the way that they have defined things, and we're arguing about what the oppressor has defined for us. Like, that is critical to me. Like, how can you coincide with your brother, your sister? We even have what is now called, and I didn't want to jump into it, but I think it's pertinent right now. We have what is called the gender war right now between Black males and Black females. Disagreements all caused by the same reaction to the system. Because my reaction to the system, because I'm male, is going to be different. Your reaction to the system is going to be different because you're female, and the way it attacks us both, and we both have to basically fall within the guidelines of the system. That's going to cause conflict between groups that don't have control over themselves. Extreme conflict. And the fact that we do not have enough of us to be calm and to show empathy towards each other, especially the ones that are the most confused, It's just amazing to me, because we lose track, we get angry, we have too much hubris, too much ego, and then it all falls apart again. And then what we're doing, we're all infighting at that point. And we can't get anything done. We can't even have a constructive conversation.
Setting up false paradigms in which victims can argue and express their frustration.
Right. Both being dominated by the same group of people. I mean, asking for permission to be on platforms, for Christ's sakes. Literally maneuvering, hovering. But then you talk tough about what you're doing to other Black people, other people that's classified as Black. It's just,
and getting paid to do
it's crazy. It's crazy,
getting
man.
Getting paid to do it.
You know, and you know, I have shared like suggestions, thoughts about, you know, hey, you know, let's not get into this. Let's not, you know, delve into this mistreatment lane. But it's hard not to do it because of the damage that's been done to us as a so-called group of people. Because, see, the attack on us is monolithic. It's very clear. It's very precise. And the motivation for it, because Dr. Wilson gave it a name, genetic annihilation, if you understand what the motivation is, then you know it's going to be either subconscious or consciously being done to you. And they're going to justify it being done to you. Because at the end of the day, it's all about survival. That's how you could see somebody drop a nuclear bomb on innocent people. I'm not making stuff up. I mean, it's like when we talked about the Robin McNamara, the Fog of War, and I would suggest people to just watch it for the sheer calculation of it. When you listen to a man that was very, very succinct and felt justified, that he felt like he provided peace on the planet, that he actually, at the end of the day, saved lives by killing people. Killing people. You see, and what ends up happening is you'll get victims trying to readjust their thinking for this. Oh, police officers are not bad. Oh, this and that. It's you. If you did this, you did that, this and that other. They wear a gun, for Christ's sakes. Okay. See, just follow me. What do police do at police academies? What are the things that they're taught to do?
Similar to the military, right?
Similar to the military,
trained,
right?
They train to target practice.
Mm-hmm.
Trained in, I guess, presumably some of the law.
Lethal force, right?
Lethal force.
Lethal force. Correct. Pseudo-military people walking around with lethal force. That's why people can transition from the military onto police departments.
They have boot camp.
It's just amazing to me. You have like police. You have like you could tell police officers to police neighborhoods without guns. That's the change. But you're never going to see that because we don't live in that environment. We live in a hostile environment. You can't even put your mind around it. But you have to be the person to readjust to them. But they're here to protect and serve. What sense does that make? See, people got to think about what's going on here. Somebody walks up to your car, they got their hand on their gun, you're afraid as a mug because you know that you may not make it home. It's like Mr. Fuller said, our mindset is not right. Serial number, keep your hand on the steering wheel, there ain't no questions. You may not go home that night. That's the truth.
It's like Paradox said, like, if there's ever a domestic dispute, police are the ones that come out, not a therapist or a counselor. Police, somebody with a gun. They're not secondary to that. They're the first one. They're the first responders.
There's this brother.
So, think about that.
There's this brother, very positive brother, and you know, I think that he shares very, very good thoughts, but it's part of the confusion that I'm speaking about. Prince EA, he's very popular. He does the little motivational sayings and stuff like that, and oh, we're all human and all this, and you know, we you know, I'm just like you, you're just like me. These people carry weapons. They kill people. Like, how many people get murdered on a regular basis? Like, I don't understand. Like, this is their job. It's to police property. Property holds more value than a person. If I'm running with a bag of money from a bank robbery, do a police have a right to shoot me if I'm running away from them? Would that be justified in the public's eyes if I'm basically stuck up an actual bank? And then I start running. I'm running now. I'm fleeing.
Running away.
Because I got property, right? Because I got property, my life is not more than what that property is for that particular bank. That's what this is about.
Your life is worth less than ink and paper. Think about that. Make that make sense.
Oh, man. My people. We have to show more empathy. We have to show more love, more patience. This is in the realm of Dr. Welsing, and I am at the top of the line. I sometimes fall into being uncodified all the time. And I know that I can do better. And I need to just follow the words of the great ancestor that has now went into the ancestral plane, Dr. Welsing, and Mr. Fuller, as far as being codified, and to do better. Because at the end of the day, I am responsible for my own behavior. And if it's at all possible, I would just ask victims of racism specifically to please try your best to not talk bad about Black people. I know it's very difficult. I'm not saying that you cannot disagree. Clearly, there's going to be disagreement. You're not going to agree with everybody you talk to, especially about solving the problem of racism. There's going to be too many views. Your views may change daily on the system. Well, I believe this was the solution this day. Now I believe this is something that we should do. But just understand that you should be able to give everybody that same leeway, that same flexibility that you want to receive also when it comes down to examining the system of racism. Please try your best to not get into conflicts with other victims of racism and to get into name calling. Because when you do that, it sets us back. And I mean the forced group into the classification of Black, because we are trying to solve this problem as soon as possible to break that code of racism, white supremacy. What are your thoughts, man, before we close on out?
Look, probably one of the, if not hardest things, but ironically easiest things to do, is what DC's talking about as far as granting to other victims that qualification to say, hey, you know, I don't agree with you, but I hear what you're saying, and I would take it under consideration. Because if any of us had the solution, racism, white supremacy would be over, obviously. There are a lot of things that obviously we did not cover in this show. But the fact that we tend to have a number of different topics, and the fact that we put that information out there, please go look at the, you know, when you get a chance, go online, look at the discussion topics. You know, the stuff that we discussed and stuff that we did not discuss as well, maybe it will strike some things in your mind that will bring clarity, hopefully not bring more confusion, but bring more clarity or provoke thought in terms of, especially when it comes to language, the trickery of it all. I'm sure we're discussing these other topics on some other shows here, but I do want to give blessings and thanks to the ancestor, Dr. Francis Cross Wilson, obviously a giant among us that came to this earth to share her profound wisdom with us. And I just hope that that light can be shined in the darkness for ages to come, and that when and if racism, white supremacy is ended, that she is venerated not as a god, but as a human who experienced racism, white supremacy, and triumphed through her thought, speech, and action. And with that, we thank you for listening to the Code Breakers. We will see you in 2 weeks.
All right. This is DC. And until next time, peace.